Did you just tell me?
Alrighty, we have a plan to get through all of this if we can today. If not, we can continue our hearing this evening. But let's begin with Senate File 2545, Senator Eaton's Cancer Surveillance System Modification Bill.
Chair, Senate File 2545 is the Cancer Surveillance System Modification Bill. It was created in 1987, and the department has recently received some funds to upgrade the cancer reporting system. And my bill asks to add occupation data and military service to the information collected.
Thank you, Senator. Is there an amendment to your bill?
There is.
It's being distributed. I think it should be at your desk. It is the A1 amendment. Did you want to tell us what there was in the amendment that would be affecting the bill overall?
My understanding, Madam Chair, was that it just moved the language into a part of the law that made more sense.
So this adds that language you were just referencing to all previous occupation dates, places of work, and all time and places of any military service performed. We'll request that information. Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Passes. Okay. To the bill, you have a testifier.
Yes. Madam Chair, committee, good afternoon. My name is Bernie Hess. I'm a member of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 1189. We support Senate File 2545 along with the Minnesota AFL-CIO. We feel it's a common sense approach and that information collected could be used to understand cancer clusters throughout Minnesota. We would stress that this is voluntary and should be viewed as a foundation to build upon to help health professionals and citizens learn from cancers which might be present in our communities. We represent workers in over 100 different work sites throughout the state. Our members' health and safety is a priority for us. Our members work in many different industries, which include meatpacking, manufacturing, and retail, along with healthcare. And the information we gather would be a good thing. I just look back to the 70s when I first started working in a factory and how I'd almost use the word primitive. I worked in an electroplating plant where a number of the senior platers, the folks that worked with chrome and arsenic and a number of other agents, had worked there so long that they could bend the tip of their noses to their faces because the cartilage had dissolved from years of exposure to some hazardous chemicals. And I often wonder how many of those folks are still around. And I think it was a long time ago. We've made many steps. We've got right to know in Minnesota, a number of other things. But this would really add, we think, to the toolbox to understand cancers and that. So we ask your support, and thanks a lot for your work.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hess. Are there any questions at this time from the members of the committee? Is there anyone else? Oh, here, Senator Nenow, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at the language on the delete all on line 1.25. The commissioner shall request the following information be reported. We're not requiring that it be reported, just requesting it. What are the implications of that, and what does this accomplish then?
Perhaps counsel can indicate what the implications of that particular use of language would be.
Madam Chair and Senator Nenow, it was in the original bill, but I believe currently under rule that the commissioner requests providers, physicians, healthcare facilities, clinics to provide certain data now on patients. I'm not sure if they're required. Maybe there's somebody from the Department of Health if they're required to, or if it is a request from the commissioner to do that from these providers.
Is there someone here from the department who could speak to this question?
My understanding is it doesn't change the process. This is how it's currently done. And
no, I don't see anybody coming forward, Senator. Is there anyone else that wishes to be heard on this bill? Did you want to do anything with that, Senator Nenow, or since it's already the language, keeping it as it is?
Madam Chair, it wasn't a particular concern for me. I just, you know, shall versus may, request versus require, there's significant implications sometimes. I just wanted to ask the question.
Okay. It's okay. All right, seeing no further discussion, Senator, would you like to offer your bill?
I think the motion is
that it be included. I guess it has to go to finance. Your
I'd
motion
like to
is
move
to
Senate File 2545 to pass and be set aside for possible inclusion in the...
Excuse me. No. I have to change your motion. It needs to pass and be referred to finance.
Finance. Okay. Thank you.
That's Senator Eaton's motion. Any further discussion? Just a moment. There seems to be some confusion about why it has to go to finance.
I was told it didn't.
The Department of Health said it did. They emailed me.
Apparently the Department of Health emailed us and said it needed to go to finance. Excuse me for interrupting. All those in favor, excuse me, Senator Lurie.
That's my understanding is okay. That the LDH thought that there might be some additional cost we should evaluate in collecting additional data elements and incorporating them into the report. And so,
do we also want to include it in this?
Mm-hmm. If it has a general finance, I don't know.
Okay. All right. So the motion is to refer to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Passes. Thank you very much, Senator. The next item on our agenda is Senate File 2644, Senator Hoffman. This is in-home nursing services, intensive care category establishment, and medical assistance payment rate increase.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for hearing Senate File 2644 related to the in-home nursing services. I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to offer now.
Senator Hoffman offers the A1 amendment. It is in your packet. It is a delete everything amendment.
Madam Chair and members, yes, this really it looked at the language of the private duty nursing to home care nursing, and we really needed to clean out that language throughout the whole bill itself.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The
aye.
A1 amendments. All those opposed say nay. Passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My hope is that the committee pass Senate File 2644 and refer it to finance. With me at the table today is Dr. Roy Maynard, who's from Pediatric Home Services, and then Lisa Flynn from Hiawatha Medical. Nurses whom we currently refer to currently as private duty nurses care for the sickest medical assistant patients that are in-home care settings. The title private duty nursing is antiquated and misleading. This bill would change the term to home care nurses, which provide quality care for medically complex patients in the in-home care setting. Home care nurses have the same skills and training as nurses in institutional settings, yet they are paid less. This inequity makes it very hard to recruit and retain home care nurses, keeping patients in the hospital longer than necessary and driving up the health care costs for the state. The complexity of patients that are being discharged to the home has increased significantly in the last 20 years since the statute was last updated. Reimbursement rates for home care nurses have not changed significantly in those 20 years as well, and they do not reflect the training and skills required to care for complex patients. So the Department of Health Services has been very involved in the technical drafting of this bill. The Professional Home Care Coalition, the Minnesota Home Care Association, and the Minnesota Nurses Association support Senate File 2644. With that, Madam Chair and members, I'd like Dr. Maynard to talk a little bit.
Welcome, Dr. Maynard.
Thank you. I am Dr. Roy Maynard. Madam Chair, members, I'm a practicing physician in the state of Minnesota. I'm board certified in newborn intensive care and pediatric pulmonary medicine. I have been intimately involved in the care of medically complex children for over two decades. Home care nurses are a valuable commodity in our community. The population of medically complex children in our community has doubled in the past 10 years. If these kids stay in the hospital longer, there's increased cost to the system. We want to recognize the fact that this is a unique specialty for nurses in the home. They recognize the recognition they should get, which will include reimbursement, but also redefine the levels of care in the home, regular and complexity, and also try and shift the burden of the responsibility for paying these kids away from the state to the third-party payers who are denying payment for private duty nursing. We're hoping by recognizing home care, we can shift that payment back to the private payers.
Thank you, Dr. Maynard. We also have Lisa Flynn, who is at the table from Hiawatha Medical, who would like to speak to the bill. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Madam Chair and members. My name is Lisa Flynn. I have worked for Hiawatha Home Care since 1988, providing complex nursing care for some of our most fragile Minnesotans. Private duty nursing originated back years ago, and it was basically the person of affluence that had money that hired a private pay nurse to come to the home to take care of them. Medicare defines private duty nursing as non-physician driven nursing care or provided by a nurse or a non-nurse. What we provide in home care is physician directed care, and we have specific billing codes. They're called HCPCS codes, and private duty nursing has T1000 as a HCPCS code for billing, and what we provide is T1002 and T1003, which says RN and LPN services. They are nothing the same, and insurance companies exclude private duty nursing, and they have since I can remember looking back. And now with the changes in our healthcare system, they're starting to deny our services, saying it's private duty because of how the state has it named, and we are not allowing our Minnesotans to maximize their health care benefits, and they're all being pushed onto MA, therefore creating a very negative fiscal impact to Minnesota as more people are having to go onto MA to provide this care that should be covered by their insurance plans. Changing the language would ensure that MA is for sure the payer of last resort as it was meant to be.
Oh, thank you very much, Ms. Flynn. Are there any questions from the members of our committee for our testifiers at this time? Seeing none, I would just ask, is there anyone in the general public that wants to testify to this Senate File 2644? Seeing no one, Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'll ask, it's a question slash comment, and I'll direct it at Council. Line 1.34, starting at 1.33, we're changing the term private duty nursing or similar terms to home care nursing or similar terms, which is a little bit squishy language. And I'm just wondering if that's standard practice. The second half of this section has a specific change private duty nurse to home care nurse, but the earlier half of that paragraph is a lot more ambiguous. And I don't have a huge problem with that, but I get a little concerned when we start doing things that aren't particularly specific.
Could you refer to the specific squishy language that you're seeing?
We're changing the term private duty nursing or similar terms, which are not defined specifically. We're changing that to home care nursing or some other similar term. And I don't think that's necessarily highly problematic, but it seems a little out of the norm, and maybe I'm wrong.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
And members, that's the way it was before. I mean, that's pretty consistent, that the use of that language, that's the way it was before. And Ms. Flynn, if you want to comment more on that, you'd be more than happy to just validate that.
So Senator Enow is noting something that's been in law before that...
Madam Chair, members,
yes.
We're not changing that piece because it was in the statute, throughout statute, everywhere. Whenever they mentioned that term, they said, or similar, similar terms. So they just left it the same because that's how it's always been, and it's not created any problems in our world.
What is its actual implications? Have there been similar terms? Have there been other terms used? Has it been a necessary
language? Madam Chair, members,
yes,
actually. Different payer sources will go by different HCPCS codes, like the billing codes I said, that describe the services. And there's also an S code that is used, which is RN in the home instead of RN services. So the services are similar. It just depends upon who you're billing, who you're providing the service to, and how you bill it. And some agencies, nursing agencies, will call it RNLP and complex services, or some will used to do private duty, or they say extended hours. So it's trying to make it so it's not just concrete, just that word only, because not everybody understands that language.
Yes.
Madam Chair and Senator Nino, in Section 1, you'll see that there's various definitions. In current law, it's complex private duty nursing, private duty nursing, private duty nursing agency. All of those terms would be changed to home care nursing agency or regular home care nursing. So those are the similar terms that would be changed from private duty to home care.
Is there any further discussion? Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lebeco, by the way.
One amendment. I've just been talking with staff and folks, and there is no cost. This is just the policy provision, it doesn't need to be referred to finance. So we can, I don't know if it's already in your omnibus policy bill, but I think we could make a motion to make this as an amendment to your policy bill in a couple of minutes.
It is not in the omnibus bill because we hadn't heard it yet.
Right.
But if it doesn't have to go to finance, then we would. That would be an action we would want to take to amend it into the omnibus bill. Do we do that after we review the omnibus bill? So we'll have to take an action after we get through the omnibus bill.
We can lay it.
We'll lay it on the table, sure, for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That would be your motion, Senator.
My motion
Hoffman,
is
to lay
it
on
the
table
for possible
inclusion
into the omnibus bill, as so Senator Laurie had reminded us. So thank you.
Thank you. Good. Any input? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Passes. Senator Hoffman, just remember when we get through the omnibus bill to offer this as an amendment to the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make that note.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. All right. I don't want anybody to go very far away, but I need to take about a 5-minute recess here, and then we will reconvene. So just hold your horses. Don't go too far away. I just need to recess for 5 minutes, and then we'll be back together to go over the omnibus bill.
I'm out of here.
I'd like to call the meeting back to order. And we are on Senate File 2087. Senator Sharon. What our plan is to go over the bill. Senator Sharon will go over the bill, and then we will have testimony, and then we will move into amendments after that. So, Senator Sharon, whenever you're ready.
Yes, Senator Wicklund, what I'm pausing about here is that we are using one of these bills as the vehicle. Do we need to take any action in relationship to that?
It's been laid over.
That bill has been laid over. So, do we need to take other action?
No, she just needs to offer her amendment off of the A3 delete all.
Oh, okay. You would just need to offer your delete all A3 amendment, or A1 or A3? Mine is A1. The A1 amendment. Yes.
So, we're offering the A1 amendment to Senate File
2087.
Thank you. That's the first action.
Thank you.
Senator Sharon, we didn't discuss it. Yeah. Senator Sharon moves to amend Senate File number 2087 with the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much, Senator Wicklund and members of the committee. You should have in front of you a table of contents that staff thankfully has worked on and prepared for you. What I asked in order to help us be oriented to the contents of this bill is that the various articles be separated so that you know which bills are included in each of the articles for the health department or for the public health, health care, etc. And I also asked, as you can see, that you are referred to the page in the delete all amendment as to where this particular section of Article 1 or 2 is located for your reference. And it also identifies the name of the author of the bill. And so I would certainly ask anyone who is here as an author to be prepared to answer questions or inform us if there are significant changes in these components of the bill as a result of moving through other committees. So with that, we'll begin with Health Department Article 1. And the first section, Section 1, is a bill presented to this committee by Senator Saxhog on behalf of Senator Tom Bach. It allows communities without a well contractor within 25 miles to use a licensed plumber to work on repairs of well water pumps and pipes. If you remember from the testimony, there was a visual indication of the distance and the difficulties that part of the state has in terms of being able to find licensed plumbers to work on these repairs. And this was passed in our committee, although there were discussions that we might add some language at some point that would require them to follow the same requirements as a licensed plumber when resolving issues with the repairs on water well pumps, and I anticipate that will come in the future when we consider amendments. When will we be considering amendments, Senator Wicklund?
After we go through testimony.
Are you wanting to have testimony as we go through each of the sections, or what will your plan be?
No, we were planning that you would go through all the sections, then we would move to testimony, and then we would move to amendments.
Okay. If somebody has a question on the committee as we go through the bill on a segment, are they able to ask a question as we go along?
I think that would be best.
Okay. So that's all I was going to say about this first section.
Are there any questions, members, on Section 1?
Okay. Section 2 is a bill presented to our committee by Senator Pappas. It was Senate File 2394. It's a bill that would establish a notification requirement for women who have dense breast tissue. There were no amendments and no other committee stops for this bill, and it passed without difficulty through this committee.
Any questions, members, on that bill? No?
Section 3, then, is a Rosen bill, and I'm certain that Senator Rosen will answer any questions the committee might have, but this is a bill that exempts dental cone beam computerized tomography from accreditation or reporting requirements in diagnostic imaging facility definition. There were no amendments and no other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Rosen.
Senator Chair, there was one amendment to it, and that was that specific, it came from Senator Kiffmeyer. It's in there? Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, it is in here, so there was an amendment. Just correct my... And what did that amendment do? Would you remind me, Senator Rosen?
Senator Rosen?
Can you remember? I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and members, it's on page 2, line 27 and 28. It just gave a facility 6 months to become accredited.
The chicken or the egg issue.
All right, so any further discussion on that? Senate file 2261 is the Minnesota Stroke Registry Program Hospital Participation Requirement. This was a bill presented and supported by the American Heart Association that mandates comprehensive and primary stroke centers participate in a Minnesota Stroke Registry Program. This did not stop in other committees. There will be an amendment to this section of the bill later that clarifies that if a stroke center or primary stroke center does not participate in the registry, then they would no longer receive their designation as a stroke center. So we will be offering that language later. It's clarifying language.
Any questions?
On page 3, Senator Eakin's bill 2262 is a bill that's supported also by the American Heart Association that establishes a registry where data is collected on the most serious kinds of myocardial infarction. And this would allow for improvements, that the data would allow them to track what happens before and after the most severe kinds of myocardial infarctions, and allow for improvements as a result of that data collection to intervention for serious infarctions. It passed our committee without amendments, and it was heard and amended in Judiciary. Do we know what the amendment was in Judiciary?
Kavanaugh.
Madam Chair and members, I believe that was a delete everything amendment, so it's not a registry. The Department of Health assesses and reports on the quality of care provided in the state for these infarctions, response, and the treatment. It's on page 3.
Would you say that again? Is it 3.14? That the Commissioner of Health shall assess and report the quality?
Correct.
Ms. Kavanaugh.
It's on page 3, section 6.
Members, are there any questions?
The next bill on page 3, section 6. Excuse me. The next bill on pages 4 through 7 is a Franzen bill. It's the home care provider licensing and compliance monitoring requirement modifications. It's a Minnesota Department of Health bill that reduces the time frame for contested cases to get them resolved more quickly. There were no other committee stops.
Any questions from the committee?
All right, on page 7 is a Wicklund bill, funeral home establishment requirement modifications that allowed funeral homes to open branch offices where only goods and services are sold and to operate without establishing an expensive embalming room. There were no other committee stops.
Any questions?
Pages 7 through 28 is a Clausen bill, a local public health systems modifications. This was also a Minnesota Department of Health bill that amends duties of boards, adds definitions, and makes conforming changes. The bill changes statutes to reflect the current practices of these boards. It was heard in state and local government, but there were no amendments to the original bill in either committee.
Any questions, committee members?
Article 3 is health care on page 28. The first bill is Senator Wicklund bill. This bill was mostly non-controversial changes to human service statutes. It amended medical assistance provider enrollment requirements, changed how counties appoint people to local social services agencies, and repealed sections in the statute that are no longer relevant. It also included a provision that directs the Commissioner of Human Services to seek approval for a federal waiver to allow the family planning program to operate with the state Medicaid plan.
Any questions, members?
On page 30 is a Franzen bill. This is a Healthcare Homes Advisory Committee establishment. This bill on page 30, section 2, is an MDH bill as well, a Department of Health bill that established an advisory committee to make recommendations on how to successfully implement health care homes.
Any questions?
Article 4 is continuing care. Begins on page 32. This is a Department of Human Services bill that mostly made technical changes to the continuing care statutes. Most of the changes were related to last session's overhaul of licensing statutes and the move to a chapter called 245D that we heard in our committee. There were no amendments in our committee and no other committee stops.
Any questions?
On page 34, section 2, is a Wicklund bill. The bill mostly is non-controversial changes to the human services statute. It amended medical assistance provider enrollment requirements. It changed how counties appoint people to local social service agencies. This is sounding familiar to me.
Senator Sharon, I guess this bill, it appears in different in multiple sections, pieces of it. So
we
sort
need
of
to,
a recurring.
It's
theme.
A recurring. Is that a necessary action that we have to have this recurring?
It's taken apart.
Okay, so also includes a provision that directs the Commissioner of Human Services to seek approval for the federal waiver. So if it sounds like I'm repeating myself, I am. Are there any questions? On page 36 is a Senator Hoffman bill. This is a DHS bill that makes technical changes to the continuing care statutes. Most of the changes are related to last session's overhaul and of the licensing statute and the moves to Chapter 245D. There were no amendments in our committee or no other committee stops.
Senator Sharon, I suppose we could go through this whole article and then ask if there's any questions, since some of the bills are kind of the same bill, but
the same, right?
But on different pages.
Like this next one, which repeats the language again. Pages 40 through 42 is Wicklund Bill, DHS operations modifications. Again, this is a bill that amends MA provider enrollment requirements, identifies how counties appoint people to social services agencies, and
includes that provision about seeking waivers for family planning program to operate with state Medicaid. That's a repeat. On page 42 is a Senator Hoffman bill, Senate file 2239.
Right. So this is one that we've already seen portions of, 2239.
Let me see. Yes, this just continues to make technical changes to the continuing care studies, and they're related to last session's overhaul and move to 245D. There were no amendments to this bill, and no other committee stops. So now we begin to change a little bit. Okay. This is Senate file 2240. It's a Senator Hoffman bill. It's a Department of Health and Human Services bill that modifies North Star care for children. It updates the group residential housing statute and conforms to federal law for background studies. Most of the changes are technical changes related, again, to last year's Health and Human Services budget omnibus bill. And the next two are repeats again. It was heard and passed in Judiciary. No amendments in Judiciary. Only the policy portions of this bill are included in our omnibus bill. And if you have questions, Ms. White can speak to this.
Then, any questions? And then the last two, sections 12 through 17 and section 18 are two bills that you've discussed, Senate file 2239 and Senate file 2526.
So if there's nothing further, we can go to the children and families.
Yep. Yes.
Let's see. We're on 1840, did you say? 1840, right.
Correct. Is the next
This is a Senator Hoffman bill. It's a bill that modifies definitions, clarifies group child care providers must be licensed, and limits the use of substitute caregiver. The bill is intended to fix computational problems caused by the current law as to when children are or aren't under the law when determining licensing for the Department of Human Services. It simplifies the age categories applying to a family daycare facility. And the current system is set up for school-based programs that operate under a school calendar system. Family child care programs, however, don't usually operate this way.
Any questions, members?
We've also included 2125, Senator Hayden's bill. This bill adds requirements about clean air to the foster care licensing criteria. These are criteria already used when placement decisions occur. The bill allows for discretion by the county when considering placement with a family member.
Any questions?
Did not have any other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
This is a smoke-free home. That's what the issue was, in case you can't remember what the decision was specifically. The requirement was that it be clean air. Something that seems to be very important these days. All right, if there are no further questions, we can move to Article 6, Health-Related Licensing Boards. Senate file 1642 is a Senator Eaton bill. It relates to complementary and alternative health care practices for licensed practitioner authorization. The background on this is in 2000, we passed a Complementary and Alternative Care Freedom to Access Act, which gave patients a legal right
to seek out complementary and alternative treatments. These therapies are currently not licensed in Minnesota because they are not seen as dangerous enough to require legislations. However, Senator Eaton proposed the bill because the statute was not clear if licensed health practitioners may utilize these treatments or refer their patients to an unlicensed practitioner of these therapies. So this bill clarifies that a licensed practitioner will not be subject to discipline if they use complementary alternative care or refer their patient to an unlicensed complementary alternative care practitioner.
Any questions, members?
No questions. Then we can go to Senator Hoffman's Bill 1665, the Chiropractor Scope and Practice Modifications. This bill was heard a couple times in the committee. It changes some definitions and statutes, elaborates on services that chiropractors provide, clarifies that they can perform these services and determine treatment options for their patients. It was amended in our committee, and it is in its final form in the committee.
Any questions?
On page 60 is Senator Franzen's bill, Occupational Therapist Physical Agent Modality Modifications, and it simply took out duplicative and outdated licensure requirements and removed a requirement that occupational therapists receive extra certification. So it reduced the number of requirement for certification for this group of practitioners. There were no amendments and no other committee stops from this committee.
Any questions?
On page 62 through 64 is a bill in sections 11 through 19 by Senator Reinert. It is the Athletic Trainer Practice Act provisions, modifications, and clarifications. It updates outdated language and puts in statute language that is in synchrony with the actual practice of athletic trainers. There were no amendments and no other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
So beginning on page 64 is a Senator Pappas bill, 1996, in sections 20 and 21 on page 64 and 5. There is language that adds the Birthplace Common Childbirth Incorporated, an organization, to the list of organizations that can certify a person as a doula. So this relates to a organization being included as a list that can certify a person as a doula. There were no other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
Page 65 and 67, sections 22 through 23, addresses a Senator Wicklund bill, 1799. This bill makes clear that all supervisors of licensed professional clinical counselors have to meet requirements under the rules and specifies the current requirements necessary for a professional counselor to convert to a licensed professional clinical counselor. So this bill relates to licensed professional clinical counselor licensing provision modifications. This bill was also heard in Judiciary. Senator Wicklund, was there an amendment made in Judiciary the committee should know about?
There was an amendment made, and it was to remove the language of good moral character. That was part of the existing statute. It wasn't new language, but the Judiciary Committee felt that was a vague sort of descriptor that
sounds
didn't.
Like Judiciary. Sounds like Senator Nino.
That didn't merit
squishy language, as he calls it.
And so we removed it.
I see. So they now they can be immoral in character?
I think that's hopefully not the outcome.
Any further discussion? On pages 67 through 68, section 24, is a bill that allows the administration of vaccines, expands the protocols for pharmacists in the administration of vaccines. It's a Minnesota Department of Health bill that better aligns the Practice of Pharmacy Act with national best practice standards for immunizations, and it requires pharmacists to comply with the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. There were no amendments in our committee, and no other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
You know, that my I just want to make clear that everybody understands that it allows, that this bill allowed pharmacists to enter into vaccine protocols with licensed Minnesota physician assistants and advanced practice nurses. In the past, it was restricted to MDs. And that is in keeping with national best practices. All right, on page 68 and 71 is Senator Eden's bill, podiatrist licensure requirement modifications. This is a bill that recognizes that the governing statutes for this practice had not really been reviewed for over a decade. And so the bill amended the license requirements for podiatric medicine, and it eliminates obsolete language and reflects current practice. There were no amendments and no other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
On page 71, there's a Senator Nelson bill. Its bill number is 1181. On page 71 to 72, section 30 describes the bill, which requires employees to report the diversion of narcotics and controlled substances to a health licensing board. It had passed this committee last year and was heard in this committee again this year.
Any questions, members?
All right, so we can go to Article 7, Chemical and Mental Health. The first bill in this section is the Senator Eaton bill on pages 72 through 75, sections 1 and 2. The bill, 1865, requires training in suicide intervention, a crisis plan for each individual providing clinical services, and specifies a training curriculum for persons in adult foster homes serving individuals with mental illness.
Any questions, members?
This committee did not amend this bill, nor was it taken to any other committees. On page 75, in section 3 and 6, Senator Eaton's bill, 2733, is reflected as a Department of Human Services bill that establishes a pilot project for notifications to the commissioner about the commencement of a commitment process and allow the administration of neuroleptic medications when it is in the best interest of the patient. I know that this was heard in judiciary and that there were some changes made to the bill. Are you able to speak to those, or could I ask counsel? Because I think we should be fully informed of what changes occurred to a bill that left our committee.
Senator Eaton, do you? Or Ms.
Madam
White?
Chair, Senator Sharon, there were amendments made in judiciary, and I have an amendment for Senator Eaton to offer when you take up amendments.
Okay, that we'll get it lined up correctly. Are these amendments that were made or were recommended in Judiciary?
They were actually made in Judiciary.
So I'm not following. If they were made, they aren't in here?
They were just made yesterday afternoon in this.
Oh, I see. So you haven't gotten it in here yet. Okay, good. Any further discussion or questions for me on this, or Senator Eaton? Okay, on page 76, Senator Hayden's bill is presented. It's sections 4 and 5. This is also a Department of Human Services bill that defines culturally specific program. The Department of Human Service will use this definition to develop programs that are responsive to the culturally diverse needs of each community. There were no amendments in this committee, and it did not go to any other committee.
Any questions, members?
The next section, pages 78 through and 86 through 92, sections 1 to 15 through 19, is a Senate File 2027. It is the e-cigarette regulations. It passed our committee, Judiciary, State, Local Government, and Commerce with no changes to the bill.
Any questions, members?
On page 79 is Senator Senjum's bill, 1877, the Freedom to See bill. This bill allows a person to obtain a new pair of glasses in an emergency situation by using a prescription from their old lenses or last available prescription. There were no other committee stops.
Any questions, members?
On page 79 and 80, section 4, is a Senator Metzen bill. This bill establishes requirements for contracts between pharmacy benefit managers and pharmacists related to the use of maximum allowable cost pricing.
Any questions, members?
Excuse me, just a moment. Mm-hmm. Want to catch up here a little bit. That was Senator Metzen's bill. That was I just doing Senator Metzen's bill, right? Okay,
correct.
That bill is deals with a relationship that's developed between pharmacists and pharmacy benefit managers, and there were specific sanctions in the bill. Okay, pages 80 through 82. This is a Senator Hayden bill, as I indicated. Sure, I've got myself oriented here to this. All right. This is a bill that eliminates an expiration date on the American Indian Advisory Council, the Alcohol and Other Drug Advisory Council, and the American Indian Child Welfare Council. It was passed in state and local government as well as this committee without amendments.
Any questions, members? Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Senator Sharon, I guess there was an amendment to it, but...
Yeah. Madam Chair and members, there was actually one amendment in policy that added the traumatic brain injury council, so that council does not expire either.
It added what council?
Traumatic brain injury.
Was that in this committee, did you say?
Yes, it was, Senator.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions?
Then we can move to Senator Eaton's bill, Tanning Equipment Use Age Limit Establishment, which is a bill that prohibits minors from using tanning beds, requires proprietors to hand
a sign to that effect, to have a sign to that effect, and providers for petty misdemeanor penalties for minors who use tanning beds. It was not amended after being heard in our committee.
Are there any questions?
On page 83 through 84 is Senator Wicklund's bill, DHS Operation Modifications. It was a non-controversial changes to the Human Services Statute. It amended medical assistance provider enrollment requirements. It changed how counties can appoint people to social service agencies and repeal sections of the statute that were no longer relevant. And, surprise, surprise, it directed the Commissioner of Human Services to seek approval for a waiver to allow family planning programs to operate within the state Medicaid plan.
Sounds familiar. Any questions?
And then our final, I think our final, let me just make sure. No, I guess we have two more. We have section 14 on page 84 is a Senator Nelson bill. This is a bill supported by the American Heart Association and required those who purchase an AED other than those intended for private use to register it with a registry that requires a maintenance program.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. There is just one small clarification. There was an amendment in Judiciary. It further cleaned up the criminal liability, and so the language you have before you on 86.22 and 80 through 86.24 is a little different than what came out of this committee. But this is the intent of the bill, and this is the cleaned up language that just simply states there's no additional liability for having AED registration, and there is no less liability. So this is just cleaner language after having gone through Judiciary.
Any other questions?
And then the final bill is the Senator Wicklund bill, 2526, on pages 92 through 93. That sounds very familiar. And after we're through this, I'll have to try to figure out why we needed to say segments of this over and over.
Right.
Before we go to the floor. So I know I won't read through that again, Senator Wicklund.
Right. So now let us move to public testimony. And first on the list that I have is Ann Tenner. And if you could please come to the table. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and your title for the record.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Ann Tenner, and I'm an attorney with National Health Freedom Action. And originally, we came to testify today in opposition of adding Senate File 1642 to the omnibus bill. However, it's my understanding now that there will be an amendment offered by Senator Eaton later today that alleviates our concerns. And so we're happy to say that we are ready to support the bill as long as that amendment gets adopted. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Okay. Thank you. Next on the list, I have Leo Cashman. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Leo Cashman, President of Minnesota Natural Health Legal Reform Project. Madam Chair and committee members, my remarks are similar to the previous testifier, Ann Tenner. We also had concerns about Senate File 1642 being added to the omnibus bill, but we also understand that those concerns will be addressed by an amendment which will be offered by the author, Senator Eaton, and we appreciate her willingness to address those concerns and the willingness of proponents of the legislation to hear the concerns. And so I think we've reached a point of unity and are satisfied with that, provided that the committee accepts Senator Eaton's amendment to Senate File 1642. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And last I have Beth Coleman.
Excuse me, I'm taking
I assume that you're taking Beth's place.
Madam Chair,
please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and Senators, good afternoon. I'm Dr. Larry Morrison, President of the Minnesota Optometric Association. I have an optometric practice in Detroit Lakes in Mahnomen, Minnesota. And I'm here today regarding the omnibus bill in the Senate File 1877 that was included in the bill and is currently on page 79. We're opposed to this language and certainly to it being part of the omnibus bill, and we're just requesting that the language be removed. The language leaves many important questions unanswered and not addressed, such as what constitutes an emergency and how old of a prescription can be used, 2 years, 5 years, 10-year-old prescription. Can this emergency excuse be used multiple times? If someone fills an old prescription and has a serious visual problem, gets in an accident, who's liable? There's a definite liability question there. If someone was to be driving a public transportation, bus, train, or school bus, who would be responsible? There are many situations where using an old prescription could be putting people at risk. It also undermines the authority of a state licensed and regulated health care provider, and it does put people at risk. What if someone uses this excuse and abuses it, as people sometimes do, and has an eye disease, such as glaucoma? It goes undetected because professional care was bypassed. Many serious issues are determined through eye examinations. High blood pressure, diabetes, brain tumors, cataracts, many others. What would that do to people's well-being and public good? This is much more than just being able to conveniently get your glasses refilled. It's not good public health policy. And as stated, there are many issues still not defined in this language. There are currently solutions and practices in place that can accommodate an individual, and it is not necessary to legislate this at this time. Finally, it's a one-house bill. It hasn't even been discussed over in the House, and it certainly needs more discussion before it should move forward. So we would ask that this language be removed from the omnibus bill, and we do have a meeting with Senator Stengem tomorrow and are happy to discuss this further with him at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. Are there any questions for the testifier?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you, Doctor, for being here. Talk about you struck something out about there's a liability here, and I had asked that same question the first night we heard this bill. And can you just elaborate a little bit more about your professional liability that's there, and in even that, you know, the when you become an optometrist or ophthalmologist, you have a code of conduct you have to abide by. Can you help us understand that?
Right.
Dr. Morrison.
Our primary job is to keep Minnesotans or people across the country seeing well. And to do that, people need to have a routine of getting routine eye examinations. And there's a good system in place right now. Our liability insurance right now, as far as professional liability insurance, is the lowest in the healthcare industry. So if you look at how much we pay for our malpractice insurance, it's nothing. So, and the reason for that is because we provide good healthcare, and we have very limited liability issues. This opens up a whole new ballgame.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On a similar vein, the language, as I understand it, is it's not a mandate, it's permissive. How does that play into the liability aspect? I mean, I understand the argument that a six-year-old prescription might not be adequate. But setting that aside, you know, how does that play into the liability aspect of someone can say, no, this is a six-year-old prescription, and it was only good for 2 years. I'm not going to fulfill it. Is it possible for providers to say unilaterally, I'm going to go with the expiration date, and if it's beyond the expiration date, I won't fill that? And is it possible for providers to say it's a year or a day or 3 years, whatever, past the expiration date, but I'm going to go with this because your emergency makes sense to me? How does that play into this liability factor?
Right now, it is up to the discretion of the eye care provider. If someone comes in and has an outdated prescription or a broken pair of glasses, for sure, they try to get them in as soon as they can. If the person refuses, then again, it's up to the individual provider. If they think it's in their best interest, they may refuse to fill it. As far as the liability end of it, we really don't know what can happen on that. I guess that's up to the lawyers to determine if a case ever comes up. So, I mean, we have a good system in place right now. I don't feel that it's abused. You know, if once or twice, you know, or like anything, there are exceptions. But I think the policy that we have in place is a good policy, and I just hate to see it legislated.
Senator Nino.
I guess to kind of summarize my question is, I'm wondering, right now there is no option for providers to say, I'm going to waive the prescription date. My question is, why is it a problem to give providers the option to accept the liability or reject the liability in saying, I'm not going to waive that expiration date, or I'm going to waive the expiration date? Why is that a problem for them to have that choice? That's what I'm wondering.
Dr. Morrison.
Yeah, I guess I'm still a little unclear of the question there, but if somebody comes in and has a broken pair of glasses and does not want an exam, right now the provider does have the option. If he wants to take on the responsibility, he can fill a prescription. But I just don't think that it needs to be legislated that he has to be mandated to fill that prescription.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So right now, if they want to accept the liability, they can?
On an individual basis.
Dr. Morrison.
On an individual basis.
Senator Nino.
And under this proposed legislation, if they want to accept the liability, they can?
On what's proposed?
Dr. Morrison.
Yeah, according to what's proposed, they would have to accept the liability.
Dr. Morrison, I think we added language to say may, and that was not part of the original bill, Senator Nino.
So, Madam Chair, if currently they can, and this legislation gives them the ability to do that as well, which they currently have, what is different other than clarification in the law?
Dr. Morrison.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's just I'm not sure that it needs to be clarified in the law. I think that the law and the practices that we've had over the years have worked very well, and I don't believe we need to throw extra language in the law to clarify something that doesn't need clarification.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Okay. Thank you very much for coming today. And now we will move to the amendments. Senator Sharon.
Yes, I have an amendment to the omnibus bill, the A5 amendment.
Senator Sharon offers the A5 amendment.
This is an amendment, members, to Senate File 2087, which relates to the registry for comprehensive stroke centers and primary stroke centers or acute stroke ready hospital. And it is an amendment that was suggested by council to clarify that hospitals who don't participate in the stroke registry would not be designated, cannot be designated as comprehensive or primary stroke centers.
Members, do you have any questions about the amendment? Seeing no questions, Senator Sharon moves to amend the delete everything amendment to Senate file number 2087. This is the A5 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Are there other amendments? Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, I have one from Senator Torres Ray, bill that she had that passed here and was sent to finance because there was a possible fiscal note, and finance said there was no fiscal note, and so we'd like to have it added. It's an A12 amendment.
Senator Marty offers the A12 amendment.
And, Madam Chair, while it's being
Senator
distributed,
Marty.
This is the training in dementia care that we, I think, passed out of here without objection, and ended up not having a fiscal note.
Thank you.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, is there someone from DHS who can come up and confirm that there was no fiscal note associated with this? I wasn't. The Department of Health, rather. I'm sorry.
Is there anyone here from the Department of Health who can speak to the amendment? Welcome, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Susan Winkleman. I'm the Assistant Division Director in the Division of Compliance Monitoring in the Health Department. And I believe your question was whether or not there was fiscal impact for the A12.
A12.
And there is none from the Health Department.
Oh. Excellent. Good enough.
Senator Lurie.
Good enough.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming up. Are there any other questions? Senator Hoffman.
No questions, Madam Chair. I'm just waiting for it to bring some amendments forward.
Oh, okay. All right. Senator Marty moves to amend the delete everything amendment to Senate file number 2087 with the A12 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two amendments. The first one is the A6 amendment, which we just heard 28 and a half minutes ago, and as that's being passed out.
Senator Hoffman moves the A6 amendment.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We just had a conversation about the home care nursing, getting private duty changed to home care nursing. This is what was accepted. We then moved it to be laid over for possible inclusion and see some head shaking. So I would like to make the motion to move the A6 amendment to be added to the omnibus.
Any questions, members? Senator Hoffman moves to amend the delete everything amendment to Senate file number 2087 with the A6 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm passing out now the A8 amendment.
Senator Hoffman offers the A8 amendment.
And as it's being passed out, it's a real simple fix. Last year, we made changes on the surety bonds. Everyone, including DHS to OIG, agreed that there was one place that missed to clarify, and this is just fixes the clarification.
Members, do you have any questions about this amendment? Senator Nino.
I don't have it yet, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Nino.
Madam Chair, I just was wondering what the requirements are in Section 256B.0659. I don't have a problem. I'm just wondering what those are.
Madam Chair, members,
does
somebody from DHS want to devolve us on the...
Senator Hoffman. Is there someone here from DHS?
Jerry Kerber, I think. There, Madam Chair. Mr. Kerber's here.
Madam Chair and members, Jerry Kerber from the Department of Human Services, and I'm sorry I don't know the exact answer, but I know that there was a lot of discussion about this last year, and there, as Senator Hoffman said, that there was one provision missed, there was an attempt to sort of standardize all these provisions, and the 256 is the one that applies to other PCA services.
Senator Nino.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to hold everything up, but let's just vote. I'll go pull it, and if I have a real problem, I'll just move to reconsider.
I appreciate what Senator Nino is asking. I do think this is not a bill that's in front of this committee this year.
Correct.
So we don't really understand the nature of what this bill was attempting to do and why we need this provision to change. But I agree that I don't think that's an unreasonable question to have us understand the context of the bill in the first place that needed this minor revision. So could you please explain what is 2087, Senate File 2087, what does it do so that we can understand why we are amending it in this way?
Senate File 2087 is the bill that we're working on. That's your bill.
But this is an amendment to bill that we really don't have a context to other than a...
So, Senator Lurie?
Madam Chair, if you go to the page where this is actually being done, page 30, line 9, is the beginning of a paragraph, and it's a requirement to purchase a surety bond. And what this is saying is it doesn't apply if you've already bought a surety bond under another section. If we don't give them this exemption, they're going to wind up being required to buy two surety bonds. That appears to be all that's happening, and we can, like Senator Nino said, we can go look up 256B-0659, but it looks like there would be a requirement to buy two surety bonds if you don't have this.
Council, did you have additional information?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. 256B.0659 is the PCA provider requirement for surety bonds, and 256B.85 is the new CFSS provider agency requirements for surety bonds. So if you already have a bond as one of those providers, you wouldn't need to get an additional one under this section.
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, if you needed more clarification, I saw Stacy from DHS is here as well, but you were shaking your head that is correct, so that should clarify it.
Senator Great. Sharon, I believe that was part of one of the bills that I was carrying, that I believe the recommendation was that to clean up to make the language the same throughout, and it sounds like this is one that didn't get taken care of. So. Okay. Senator Hoffman moves to amend the delete everything amendment with the A8 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a number of amendments. I'd like to start with the one that was discussed earlier, which is the A10. On the unlicensed complementary and alternative health care practitioners.
Senator Eaton offers the A10 amendment that will be distributed. Senator Eaton, do you want to speak to the amendment while we're...
Sure. The main change is that in on line 3.3, this section does not apply to a health care practitioner licensed or registered by the Commissioner of Health or a health-related licensing board who utilizes complementary and alternative health care practices within the scope of practice of the health care practitioner's professional license. In other words, we're not messing with the doctors.
In other words, what, Senator?
We're not messing with anybody's scope of practice, the doctors or anything. Apparently, the way the language was, that they thought there was some directive to license medical doctors, and we're just clarifying that we're not.
Are there any questions about the amendment? Okay. Hearing none. Senator Eaton moves to amend the delete everything amendment to Senate File Number 2087 with the A10 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Senator Eaton.
I also have the A7 amendment, and this is
essentially the language that was put on the bill on neuroleptic medications and the pilot project for commitment that was done in the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you.
So this is what we heard reference to before. This just happened yesterday, and the changes haven't been incorporated, so now we're going to incorporate them with this amendment.
Right. The main change was that we added prior to admission to a treatment facility, so it would indicate the continuation of medication would not occur for somebody who was already in the facility. We're talking about somebody newly admitted on medications that they're willing to take would be able to continue taking them, even though they've been ruled not a competent decider. Does that make sense?
Are there any questions on the amendment? Hearing none, although Senator Eaton moves to amend the delete everything amendment to Senate file number 2087 with the A7 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Senator Eaton.
I have the A16 amendment, which is on the bill that related to the pharmacists and vaccines. And I don't know why I'm amending it.
That's not what that does.
Is there an...
The...
is that correct? Is the number...
Go.
The 16 that she has refers to a task force.
Is it amending the membership?
Oh, that's what this one is? Okay. Sorry.
You wish to offer the A16 amendment?
I do.
That correct? Okay. That will be distributed.
That one I know what it is, yes. This essentially addresses the... Autism Task Force that's been in place for a number of years. We completed our work and developed a plan of action, and so the task force can be disbanded at this time. That's what this would do. And I found out there was a fiscal note for creating the new one, so we'll have to do that next session.
Okay. Members, are there any questions about the A16 amendment? Hearing none, Senator Eaton moves to amend the delete everything amendment to Senate file 2087. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any no? Motion passes.
I think I'm done.
Is that... Any other amendments? Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, I offer the A9 amendment.
Senator Lurie, do you wish to describe?
Madam Chair, while this is being handed out, this is regarding electronic drug prior authorization, standardization, and transmission. There's a requirement in current law that beginning on January 1 of 15, drug prior authorization requests have to be submitted electronically. We were assuming that the federal standard would be available by that date. It is not quite available yet, and it's probably 6 to 12 months out, so we'd like to push that date out a year before requiring a standard that may change as we move forward. So that's what this amendment does. Moves that effective date from January 1, 2015 to January 1, 2016.
Are there any questions about the amendment? Senator Benson.
And does this have interactivity with ICD-10 and those, is it?
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Lurie.
Not very much, but part of the reason for 2015 and the reason that, you know, this went into law several years ago, and the 2015 date was actually in recognition of the fact that it would be a little bit after the ICD-10 requirement came online. The ICD-10 requirement was itself postponed several times so that it hasn't come online yet. But that's not really related to the fact that there isn't a national standard transaction type approved at this point. But there's a tangential relationship, but it's a pretty tenuous one. At any rate, the national HIPAA requirement isn't there yet, so I don't believe it's quite fair to ask providers and group purchasers to do this electronically under a standard that may or may not change.
Anything else? Any other questions? Okay, Senator Lurie moves to amend the delete everything amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes.
That's a good one.
Any other? Oh, sorry. Senator Sharon, do you have an amendment?
Yes, I have a couple of amendments. Are these the last? I can wait. There are others.
Senator Benson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to try one more time in Article 8 to delete Section 1, 78, page 78, line 17. You know, pretty non-controversial peace in the valley sort of bill, and I understand there's been some talk that the governor doesn't think this needs to be done right now, but I'd like the committee to take one more look at it and see if we can just focus on electronic cigarettes and vaping products. Let's not let kids have them, but if adults want to do this, let's let adults make their choices. So,
Senator Wicklund?
Senator Sharon.
I'd prefer, if Senator Benson would be willing, I have an amendment for this section of the bill, and I'd like to, I was waiting for other amendments to go forward before introducing that amendment.
And I apologize, Madam Chair. I wasn't aware that Senator Sharon was going to take activity on this section, and so I will withdraw my amendment.
Senator Benson withdraws her amendment. Are there any other members who have amendments? Senator Sharon, do you?
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Was there someone else?
Oh, I have another
Senator
amendment.
Lurie?
Do you want to make yours? Madam Chair, I have the A14 amendment. And while that's being passed out, Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
We had this before our committee a couple of days ago. It went to the Finance Committee. This is the restricting of getting a prior authorization for the special dental services for disabled folks. And we made note that, you know, we felt that we had purchased this last year and that the prior authorizations actually prevented us from purchasing the services that we all thought we bought. And DHS agreed with us and gave us a zero fiscal note on this one for these dental services. So with that clarification from DHS, this would be able to go into the omnibus policy bill, and I'd like to move that.
Cool. Senator Lurie moves the A14 amendment. Are there any questions about the amendment or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of Senator Lurie's amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Are there any other member amendments? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I would like to begin with some oral amendments on page 79 to the exception to eyeglass prescription expiration.
Senator Sharon, council also informs me that there's a well contractor amendment. Would you like to do that one
first?
Let's
begin with that. Let's begin with that.
Senator Sharon moves the A2 amendment.
While it's being passed out, Ms. Kavanaugh, would you explain the amendment? I don't have a copy in front of me.
This is Kavanaugh.
Madam Chair and members, there was some discussion when this was heard in policy earlier about requiring the licensed plumbers who are able to do some of this water pipe and water well repair work without a well contractor license. If it's the repair location is there isn't a licensed well contractor within 25 miles of it, of the location of the repair, and you wanted to ensure that the licensed plumber complied with the rest of the chapter and all those requirements other than the license. So in moving that language to this section, that is accomplished that's under E here that says that the individual, the license not required. So they're not required to be a well contractor, but they are required to comply with all other provisions of this chapter.
Are there any questions about this amendment? Any words you wanted to add?
No, I know that our committee wanted this language added, and this was our opportunity.
Okay. All those in favor of Senator Sharon's amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes.
And now my oral amendment, members, is on page 79. I would like to change. I know that that we may need to have further discussions. I understood that the optometrists were going to be meeting with Senator Senjum, and there will be opportunities on the floor to amend further this omnibus bill, so those discussions can go forward. But in the meantime, in relationship to a couple of the concerns expressed, I thought I'd offer some amendments. This is in relationship to how many times, the age of the prescription, those issues of concern to and the risk issue. So on page 79, line 79.6, eliminate the period after the word available and add, if not older than 1 year from the date of expiration.
Members, do you have any questions about the amendment? Is it clear?
And then, in addition, I would add on line 79.9, eliminating the period after prescription and add, because this relates to a person may elect to use an eyeglass prescription from an expired prescription, so it's talking about the individual electing to do that. So the language I would add would say, that person would and accept, this is the language, and accept the medical risks for using an expired prescription.
Medical risk, what's medical risk?
Are there any questions on the two changes? Senator Nino.
So the kind of continuing my earlier line of questioning, under current law, testimony was that what the current language does is allowable. It doesn't create anything new. It just really kind of clarifies what technically is allowable now. But by adding in on line 79.6, you are actually putting in some additional limitation that technically doesn't exist right now. You're giving a one-year limitation. I don't know if that's good or bad, but you're putting in a one-year limitation from the date of expiration on the prescription. And then on line 79.9, how does that apply? Is that some sort of form, or is that just a oral notification of, you know, I accept the risks, or how does that work?
Well, so Senator, you know, I wasn't wanting to put the process by which that would be established into law, but in the same way that how do we document that the person has accepted the risks? I think that the language of the bill, page 79, according to Senator Senjum's language, requires, that says that the person elects to use the prescription if the person has been advised by an optometrist physician on the risks involved with using an expired prescription. So that's all part of what a person would probably document when they met with if I was going to do this prescription and the prescription has expired and I'm providing the prescription, I would go through the risks and say you're accepting the medical risks and sign them. I mean, that would just be a process that I would do given this language in the law.
Senator Nino.
So that's not necessarily a new requirement, and since it's an option right now for providers, they could require this anyway.
Yeah.
You're just saying that if someone wants to use an expired prescription that's less than 366 days expired, they have to accept the risk somehow. But you are adding in a requirement that in current law doesn't exist, where today, theoretically, if I could find a provider that agreed, I could have a two-year expired prescription that I could get renewed, but under this language, that would not be possible. It has to be less than one, or it has to be 1 year or less. Correct?
Senator Sharon?
Yes, I understand that there will be some conversations further about that issue, whether or not it's necessary. We did have a reading of the law when we were reviewing this with Senator Senchum. There's nothing in the law except for contacts that prohibits the filling of a prescription, period. That doesn't have any time restrictions or anything. It's allowed. It's a practice to check an expiration date on the prescription by the providers. So this would say that they may do this, and it would restrict how long the prescription can be used in terms in case of an emergency or broken glasses, which I think sort of fits with the concerns they had about the well-being and the health of the person's eye.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Sharon, I guess my concern is that now we've made an expired prescription plus 1 year. That's as far as you can go. But a professional can't use their judgment and say, okay, this is an emergency. You've got a four-year-old prescription. We're going to get you through. Make an appointment with me next week. We take away professional judgment of any kind by adding one more year.
I understand what you're saying, that you're taking away the discretion of the prescriber when they already have liberty to do this.
Right.
And if they wanted to go past a year, then why not let them, since it's within their within their capacity now. I'll withdraw that section. I simply put that in because I heard the testifiers say, how long is this good for? So I thought I would be responsive to that. But, you know, I'm persuaded that it's up to the discretion of the provider. So I remove that portion of this.
Any further questions on the remaining oral amendment?
And
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, I hate to keep getting wrapped around the axle on this eyeglass prescription thing, but if we put in medical risks, that doesn't take away any of the other risks. If they're driving a car with expired lenses and they crash into a building, that's not a medical risk. I guess I'm, the more attention I pay to this, the more it feels like this entire section, section three, doesn't really do anything that they're not already allowed to do. I guess with all deference to Senator Senchum, they're already allowed to say, okay, you've got a 10-year-old prescription. Let's get you an appointment. But to get you through the weekend, we're going to get you a pair of glasses. They already have the discretion in statute to do that. I'm not sure this accomplishes anything except adding lines to statute.
You know, I think we all are hearing this discussion, and but I really think, and I'll remove my amendment, all of the oral amendment. But I would just, since I heard that there was a conversation going to be occurring with Senator Senchum, that, you know, there'll be time for him to do what he needs to do, or for us to make amendments to this on the floor of the Senate if we choose to. I just as soon leave it in for Senator Senchum to be able to continue to nurse this if he chooses to. And I'll remove my oral amendment.
Okay.
And if somebody has another motion.
Senator Benson?
Actually, Madam Chair, I'm going to go back to what I was going to do before, which is on Article 8, delete Section 1, starting with line 78.17. It's the prohibition on public use of vaping devices.
Senator Sharon, did you... You were just speaking of this.
I was only speaking of the section. I was only speaking of the exception to eyeglass prescription expiration.
Right.
That I would remove my amendment from that section,
right,
I just thought if there was anybody else who wanted to make an amendment to that section.
I apologize. I thought you were finished with all of your amendments. I will withdraw my amendment again.
You're anxious on that.
I withdraw her amendment. Senator Sharon, did you have additional amendments?
I have. If we're finished with that and there's no further amendment on Section 3, then I have another amendment, although I don't know the... I haven't got a copy of it. On the e-cigarettes bill.
The amendment is being distributed. I don't know if you want to speak to it before. This is the A15 amendment.
Thank you. This is for Senate File 2087, which is the clean indoor air provisions expanded to the use of electronic cigarettes. And I'm making a motion to amend Section 1. To more thoroughly describe it, deletes Section 1 and then inserts the following provision that regarding electronic cigarettes. The use of electronic cigarettes, including inhaling and exhaling the vapor from any electronic delivery service defined in the section, is prohibited in government-owned buildings in the same manner as the use of tobacco cigarettes are prohibited under Subdivision 1.
Members, do you have any questions? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, this is obviously a big pullback from what you had in the bill. Could you speak to why putting this in now? I understand you're trying to figure out what you can get through, but could you speak to that issue a bit? Because
I'm trying to temper what it is I have to say about this, Senator Marty. I think the Senate's position to this point was the right position. 78% of the public in the poll that was conducted indicated that the hard work to keep indoor air clean from all exhaled chemical content was their preference. I do not think in any way that asking electronic cigarette users to not use that in an indoor space and to use alternatives that are FDA approved is not excessive. But because there has been an intervening action on the part of the governor, it weights the issue towards the position that the House has taken. And so in order to make certain that our bill that comes from the Senate is in the form that we want it, and that we're able to move forward a provision that makes a significant improvement in the situation, although not a complete protection of the public from the risk that they're asking us to protect them from, that we need to do and want to do the very best we can on behalf of the public. And that is why I'm offering this amendment.
Senator Rosen.
And
of course, you can vote it down if you want to.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I was wondering if the Health Department is here, if they had any comments.
I see a shaking head that no.
Is the Health Department here?
Yes.
You don't want to get up and go. I gathered that.
Where is the Health Department?
I was just curious if.
Who's here?
Ms. Finnegan, you seem to be shaking your head no.
No, the Health Department.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I will be voting no on this amendment, Senator Sharon. And I do feel very strongly about the Senate position, and I want to state that for the record. I think it is a mistake to go into conference committee with anything less than what the Senate position was. I feel we had a very intelligent, passionate discussion about this, and I believe the argument that there isn't enough data available or information about e-cigarettes is lame and can be used on the other side. Yes, we don't know enough about e-cigarettes to say they shouldn't be banned because we do not know if they are safe. And so that's how I look at it, is that we're allowing something to happen in public at the risk of public safety. So I will be voting no against this, and I truly wish we would stay true to the Senate position.
Further discussion. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sharon, I have absolutely no problem with government putting regulation on itself. So I appreciate this proposal. I'm going to ask if you might consider one, I'll call it minor, but you might not view it as minor, one minor change to the language. We've had the discussion here in this committee, and I talked about how we should have a demonstrable, compelling public interest before we start putting regulations on businesses and private property and individuals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If government wants to regulate itself, I really don't have a problem with that. It's kind of like a business regulating itself and saying we're not going to sell to minors. Even though the law allows us, we're not going to. You know, I think if government wants to regulate itself, that's not a problem. My only twinge of a concern on the language that you have right here is it's not limited to state government. This would also require any city, any township, potentially maybe school-owned property. I don't know. Would it be highly problematic in your view if we said that this is specific to state government property so that the state is regulating itself and allowing that local control of cities and townships and other governmental entities, or would that be problematic for you?
Senator Sharon.
Well, I would not want to change the exact description of where use of e-cigarettes is prohibited that is in this language. And because it further broadens the capacity of an electronic user to vape and to expose the public to the risks of vapor beyond the state offices and the state office buildings. And I come from a very different belief system than you do about this, which is this is already too narrow in terms of the responsibility we have to protect the public from risk as a public health initiative. And to ask the public to take a risk with e-cigarettes in order to take care of concerns we have about addicts who are using a highly addictive substance, and that we enable that rather than protect the public's health is unacceptable. The government absolutely has the responsibility to engage in activity that protects the public health. We do this in a variety of places. We've done it with other drugs similar to nicotine and prohibited the exposure of the public to them until they've been demonstrated to be safe, or at least the risk is so small as to make it worth using in the general public. So to reduce this even further, I think, would be too significant a step away from our obligation as a state, which is to protect the public's health.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that answer, Senator Sharon. And I'm not going to mess with your amendment, and I'll support it. I think it's a step in the right direction as far as allowing local control and personal property control and individual business operations, et cetera, without that demonstrable, compelling public interest. I just wish that if we had, and I'm thinking of the small city that I grew up in, the city of Stacy, that if they had an employee, the city clerk, maybe, and I'm not talking about the city clerk. I don't know the city clerk personally. But if the city clerk has a pack-a-day habit and wants to switch to e-cigarettes as a way to transition away from tobacco, that probably would have dramatic positive health impacts for them. Yeah, I mean, I just anecdotally, I can tell you that from family members that have switched. And that could have tremendous positive impact or lack of negative impact on their health insurance costs if that particular individual isn't getting sick all the time or avoids lung cancer. That is why I asked that, to allow that local flexibility. My personal opinion is this amendment moves in the right direction, so I'm not going to oppose it. I'm not going to mess with it to cause you problems. That is just, I guess, a comment of and some commentary behind why I was asking about that.
Senator Marnie.
Madam Chair, I'm going to strongly second what Senator Rosen said about the amendment. I understand Senator Sharon's trying to get something that will pass the legislature and be signed into law. And I didn't mean to put the health department on the spot, but I really do think until we have the health department and others telling us that this is safe, the idea that we're going to go, I think, backwards on what we did a couple years ago is really troubling. And Senator Sharon, I actually hope you'll vote against your own amendment, because I think you don't want this. I know that you're trying to figure out strategically how to make something happen. If the health department comes and tells us they think there's not a problem with these devices, I think that's one thing. But I think the very reality is exactly that we don't know. And these are nicotine delivery devices. They are drug. They are helping people. They're delivering drugs to people. And I think you understand, and I understand how much problem we've had with the cigarette industry over the years, and they're very, very smooth. And the nicotine pushers go from one device to another, and they've got a new one here. And I think your bill was – the bill to deal with this was very good. And I understand why you're proposing this, but I think until I hear from health department and others that this is an okay device, it's perfectly safe, I'm going to strongly urge us to join Senator Rosen in opposing the amendment.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, if you don't mind. I think actually Senator Eaton had it right the other day when she said that, what kind of signal are we sending? Well, you know, we get so bottlenecked up into this argument about is it safe, is it not safe, but what kind of signal are we sending to our youth? If we really have a campaign on stop smoking, then we should really take care of this in public places. That's all we're doing. We're not banning e-cigarettes. We're saying you cannot smoke them in a public place. And this amendment does go backwards. Absolutely goes. It just decimates the entire purpose of the bill, I think, because now you're going to have these in public places and you're sending a signal to these kids, it's okay. But you can't smoke cigarettes, but you can smoke a cigar or you can smoke e-cigarettes. We're a little disingenuous here.
Senator Sharon.
Senator Wicklund, I really appreciate the feedback that I'm getting on the amendment, and I've heard from three of our senators. I would really appreciate it if I could ask each of you to speak to this amendment. I'd like to know your positions before we take the bill and your thinking about it, if you don't mind.
I know my position.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I spoke before, whether they're safe or not, as Senator Rosen indicated, it's bad enough we're having to fight the media to stop showing positive role models smoking cigarettes, you know, but to have people once again out smoking in public, and some of them do look very cigarette-like, and some of them do not, but we don't know what's in them. There's no regulation of what's in them, so we don't know if it's just the nicotine, you know, if that vapor's fine, or if there's other chemicals mixed in, and what are those? What is the residue from that? And or if people are using them to take illicit drugs, because that's been known to be done too. So I just think until we know better and have more studies on this, that that we just keep them out of the public and keep them. Let's not role model them to our children as something good to do.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with your amendment, Senator Sharon. And I own a business, and I choose not to allow people to smoke in my business because that's my choice. I think in a government-owned building, we should be following the example and saying it's prohibited. It's prohibited in any government-owned building. I think I agree with that. You're setting a parameter about what is what we see as acceptable and not acceptable. We have a right to do that. As Senator Nienau points out, if government wants to control government, so be it. Well, in this case, I so be it, and I support your amendment, and I would encourage everybody else to support it as well.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sharon, I believe your amendment strikes a good balance here. I'd like more information on what's in those e-cigs. I know I've visited with you about the importance of we need to get those contents on the packages or whatever they're called so that the public knows, and more importantly, so we could study it and know how it really does affect the public. At this point, we don't know, and that is a worry. But I will say I think your amendment strikes the right balance, which is let's lead, let government lead, let's ban these in government buildings, and hopefully also get the data that's necessary to determine do these fall under the Freedom to Breathe Act. And I think your amendment strikes the right balance here, and I definitely appreciate all the aspects that were already here, which are no one under 18, keep them out of school, keep them locked up. I appreciate all of that language, and I would like to see something requiring knowing what the ingredients are that are in those. And until we require that, I think we're going to have a hard time getting the data that we need to know, the information about do these have secondhand smoke issues? I don't know that we know that yet. I'd like to get the information on that.
Any others choose to weigh in? Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the author has asked for comment. And so I appreciate you moving and accommodating. I know it is not your core belief, but to listen to people on the other side and give a little our way is very, very much appreciated. We already don't allow we don't allow cigarettes or cigars to be smoked in public places. Illegal drugs are already illegal. And so I think the great provision where we prohibit children from purchasing and using these products stays in place. And I respect that you use both sides, that you listen to both sides of this discussion in moving your amendment. So I will be supporting your amendment. Thank you.
Any further? Ma'am. Oh, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, in response to Senator Benson's thing, yes, cigarettes smoking for kids has been illegal as far back as I can recall, and the industry markets them very heavily. Adults smoke them. It's the adult thing to do. And we have not been very successful. It still kills thousands of Minnesotans a year. And the same nicotine pushers who pushed it by the Camels and Marlboro and everything else are converting to new tools. We don't know the safety of it. I just think that saying that, well, we'll just ban it for kids and let them do it, and the rest of us have to get whatever fumes might be released that we don't know about. I just think that I think this is going backward from where we were several years ago. And Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, your business cannot allow smoking it if you want to, because the law says you can't. And I think it should be the same with this.
Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
To Senator Marty's point, it's my understanding that teen smoking has actually increased recently, post-Freedom to Breathe. And I think it's appalling, and I don't know why. But drug use is also going up, and so I think there's something fundamental going on with our kids that isn't necessarily just about e-cigarettes or cigarettes or grown-ups are doing it, because our society is very clear about heroin use and all the sort of creative chemical drugs that are out there, and yet those uses are starting to go up. And so I understand the problem you're trying to solve. I think that not allowing them to use these products is one part of what I think there's something we're missing with our kids, because even things that we've completely banned are now becoming more common and accepted among our youth.
Madam Chair?
Senator Rosen.
I do have a couple comments, too, that, well, obviously teen smoking is going up because we've got some funding to the smoking programs in the school, and I think we, again, are sending a disingenuous message to our children. They're confused, especially for those kids in Colorado that are dealing with, you know, legalizing pot. So that's where I stand on that. But I do want to just say, when we passed the Freedom to Breathe, Senator Sherwin, when that was your bill, that took a lot of courage to do that. And if you don't think, a lot of you were not here when that was passed, that was a very courageous act to do it. And you know what? The ramifications have been zero. There was about 3 months there that I was afraid to go into a couple of joints in my district because I thought I was going to get hammered. I went in there and they thanked me. They thanked me. So you know what? This is a courageous act here too, Senator Sherwin. I wish you would stay strong on this amendment and pull it and stay strong to our Senate position, I say, because, again, we are doing the right thing. Whether we have the there's research out there, and it goes various ways, guys, both ways. So to say that we don't have research to validate either side is not true. It's almost doing the right thing, sending the right message. That's where I'm going to stay. As a good Republican, I still feel that we need to do the right thing for the state and for our kids.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, Senator Sherwin asked for each of our opinions. I'm listening. I'm going to vote no on this amendment. I think that we should maintain the Senate position out of the Health Committee. We're about health in this committee. There's time down the road to negotiate if that's needed. But out of the Health Committee, I think it would be a tragedy to weaken this. And I'm going to vote against your amendment.
Senator Sherwin, I have to also say I have to vote in opposition. I think it'd be a big step backward for public expectations. They expect to be able to go out to public places and restaurants and not have to wonder, not have to think about it. And I think that to take that part out and just say government buildings, I think that would be a great step backward and a disappointment for many in the public. Are there any other comments? Questions? Senator Sherwin, did you have any other remarks?
Would you give me just a moment to reflect here?
To count, you mean?
That's what I'm doing. That's what everybody is. I know.
When it fails, I'm entirely bored.
Well, I really appreciate that you have all this. I know it's very unusual for an author to ask everybody to speak their mind on this issue, but I think it is a critical issue. As you know, as an author, I struggle between trying to create an outcome that, especially in the health community, that protects the public health, and that we achieve as much of our capacity to do that as possible. So I wanted to place this opportunity in front of this committee to consider this, knowing that if it passes, it may be supported by others who don't support the current first article in our bill. But if it doesn't pass, that this bill moves forward with the risk that it may be modified more significantly. We lose control of the bill once it leaves this committee in many ways. So that was the challenge for me, to determine at what point do we retain control over the language of the bill, or do we begin to make a clear statement of the health policy from this committee and then work from that point forward. So your comments today and your discussion were critically important to helping me understand how our committee would reflect on such an amendment as this. So I appreciate and I encourage everyone to vote exactly the way they believe they should on this bill. I'm not directing your vote in any way.
Madam Chair, roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. Are we ready to take the roll?
Mm-hmm. Senator Benson.
And this is to the amendment?
This is to the amendment.
Yes.
Sorry. Senator Eaton.
No.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes. How do you think he'd vote?
Senator Lurie.
No.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Nelson.
No.
Senator Nienau.
Yes.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Wicklund?
No.
Senator Sharon?
No.
There are 7 yeses and 3 noes.
The motion does not pass. Nope.
The amendment does not pass. Right, correct. Right. Okay, so that completes my amendments to the omnibus bill. And if there aren't further amendments, I would offer.
Senator Sharon, I guess there is another amendment. There's a Senator Hayden bill that we need to offer as amendment. Senator Nino, you have another amendment?
I have an oral amendment when we get to that, Madam Chair.
Okay, do you want to, can we deal with this
one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It should be amended into our committee.
Okay.
Committee members, I would offer the A13 amendment. The A13 amendment is Senate File 704. It is a Senator Hayden bill that was heard and passed in our committee. It was passed last year, and then it passed in Judiciary this year. So the bill was sent to Finance, but it was confirmed by the Department of Human Services that it has no cost. The bill title is Child Maltreatment Report Screening Guideline Compliance Requirements, County Record Retention of Repeated Reports and Maltreatment Requirements. And what this bill did, if I remember correctly, is recognize that some maltreatment reports don't rise to a certain level of investigation, and therefore, without this bill, they would not be tracked.
Members, any questions?
It also allows an opportunity for some intervention at an earlier level of concern.
Members, do you have any questions on the amendment? Senator Lurie.
Chair, at the risk of being repetitive, can DHS come forward and confirm that there is no cost to this amendment?
Is there someone from DHS who can speak to the amendment? I do not.
There's someone.
Senator Lurie, I don't. Oh.
Hi, I'm Karen Mickelson with the Department of Human Services, and I can confirm there is no fiscal note on this bill. Is that the question?
Yes, that's the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Sharon moves to amend the Delete Everything Amendment, Senate File Number 27 with the A13 Amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. And are there any other amendments? We'd like to be able to finish. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oral amendment on page 82, line 28, before the period, insert, without written signed consent by a parent or legal guardian.
Would you repeat that, please, Senator? I just got to page 82.
Page 82, line 28, before the period, insert, without written, signed consent by a parent or a legal guardian. Madam Chair, for those in the audience, this is the section that has a prohibition on use of tanning equipment by anyone under the age of 18. My language would allow that if the parent or legal guardian approves.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been classified as a carcinogenic, the same as tobacco. We do not allow parents to give a written consent to allow their children to smoke cigarettes. And to me, that would be the same thing we're doing here. So I would strongly oppose this.
Any other discussion on the Senator Nino?
Madam Chair, question for counsel. If a parent bought a tanning machine in their home, could the child use it if they were under age 18, not in a facility?
Ms. Kavanaugh.
Madam Chair, I can't at this point answer that without looking. I don't know if there's a definition of a tanning equipment. It's in 325H. It's not. I'm not sure.
Madam Chair, I would purport that a tanning facility is not a home. This is a prohibition of using this equipment in a tanning facility. So what we have is not a prohibition on use of a tanning machine, but a use of a tanning machine in a tanning facility. If a parent wants to do it and spend the money at home, we can. We don't allow parents to buy cigarettes for their children to smoke at home. That's against the law. This would allow them to use a tanning booth at home. Wouldn't be against the law. It's a little bit of an incorrect comparison, Madam Chair.
Senator Nina, are you recommending that we add in a youth under 18's home?
Senator Nino.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, if you want to do that, you can. It's your bill. My point was that the argument is not an apples to apples comparison.
Senator Eaton.
I would be very open to an amendment to add banning them in the home for children under 18, if Senator Nino would like to do that.
Senator Nino.
Madam Chair, obviously I think that's a stupid idea. If the authors want to do that, they can. My point is, this is not something that is demonstrably unhealthy in every occurrence. Quite the opposite. There are health benefits to certain light spectrums for certain individuals in certain circumstances. And so, we could literally have a doctor who says to a child who's 17, you know what, I think you've got a vitamin D deficiency, go to a tanning booth, it'll help. I don't know. Those kinds of things could occur, and we would be prohibiting them from going to a tanning facility. We could have parents that take their children to the beach every single weekend, and that's fine. But they can't go to a tanning booth. That's not fine. We're inserting government between the parent and the child. And I think that's a dangerous proposition when it's not something that is automatically detrimental. Smoking, there's no benefit to smoking. I get that.
Senator Wicklund.
Senator Sharon.
I think we've argued this, whether or not this is a valid provision for the bill, when the bill was heard in the committee. I certainly would welcome Senator Ninaus making a motion, taking an action rather than continuing the debate. If he wants to make a motion to eliminate this provision, he can test it. Or if he wants to change the language to resolve the discrepancy that he described. But I think that the debate about this, I don't think it's going to change anybody's perspective, and I think he should test whether or not he's being persuasive with a motion.
Senator Nino.
Madam Chair, that's the question before us, the motion of the language that I moved.
And Ms. Kavanaugh, can you read the amendment?
Madam Chair and members, correct me if I'm wrong here, but line 28 on page 82, before the period insert, without written signed consent by a parent or legal guardian.
Okay. On that question, members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Are we ready to vote on the bill?
I need to guess.
I think we're ready to vote on the bill. Hearing no other amendments.
Trying to get our members back in for the vote.
Yeah. Are we ready?
Yep.
Senator Sharon.
I renew my motion for that the A1 amendment, delete all amendment, be passed and referred to the floor.
As amended.
As amended.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes.
And does that complete our work for today? Are we meeting any longer? Okay.
And the meeting is adjourned.